Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Welcome to the Social Network Show. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J, and your co-host today is Deirdre K. Breckenridge, CEO of the firm Pure Performance Communications. Now, Deirdre is a VIP around the social network station, so I want to tell you all about her because she is about to launch her own show here called Women Worldwide. A veteran of 27 years in PR and marketing, Deirdre has counseled senior-level executives at companies including Hershey's, JVC, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, Empire Today, Market Wired, and Siegel & Gale. Top Rank named Ms. Breckenridge among the 25 women that rock social media, while Tracker has recognized her among the top 10 PR 2.0 influencers. Deirdre is also an instructor at New York University and UMass Amherst. Her latest of five Financial Times books is Social Media and Public Relations, Eight New Practices for the PR Professional. She loves sharing her expertise and has presented in India, Europe, Australia, and across the U.S. She is also a lynda.com author with a 30-video course on the fundamentals of public relations. Ms. Breckenridge is a member of PRSA, which is the Public Relations Society of America, and has served on the board of New Jersey PRSA, as well as the New Jersey Advertising Club. She blogs about the changing media landscape and collaborative technology at PR Expanded, and is the co-founder of the PR Stud Chat, a dynamic Twitter discussion scheduled monthly for PR students, educators, and PR pros. And that should have a hashtag in front of it. And of course, to great import to us, Deirdre also serves on the board of the Social Network Association and is working with us on our initiative, hashtag 50 shows, empowering women to amplify women's voices and give them a media platform. You can find out all about that at 50shows.com while you await for the first episode of Women Worldwide on Friday, November 28th. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Deirdre.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, before you tell us about the guest you've invited today and introduce her, could you give us just the gist of what your show, Women Worldwide, will be about?
Yes. So it's a program with women across the globe sharing their incredible stories. It could be great successes, toughest challenges, the toughest losses, but most of all to impart advice, to educate and give insights, all in an effort to help people get inspired and to find their inner strength.
Oh, that sounds intriguing. And now, please tell us about Melissa Agnes.
Okay, well, Melissa Agnes is president and co-founder of Agnes Day, and she has developed an international reputation for crisis management, planning, and training by helping large global brands prevent and manage a wide range of corporate issues and crises. Her client list includes Fortune 500 companies. She serves public, private, and not-for-profit organizations. Melissa is an international speaker on the topic of crisis management, and she's also a guest lecturer. She's spoken to organizations and audiences the likes of NATO, the Ministries of Foreign Affairs, Ministries of Foreign Defense, Ministries of Health. She speaks for oil and gas associations, as well as a number of other nonprofit organizations. I also want to mention that Melissa is the editor of the highly acclaimed Crisis Intelligence blog, And she is also the host of her internationally recognized Crisis Intelligence podcast. And with that, it is such a pleasure to welcome Melissa Agnes to the show.
Thank you so much for that nice intro, and congratulations on your new fabulous show, Deirdre.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, Melissa, you have been very busy lately talking about today's crisis realities and how to manage them. And we're thinking that you are so busy because we're hearing more and more about companies getting into trouble, how they're effectively and sometimes not so effectively managing issues or crisis situations. And of course, this is where you and, you know, your crisis team can really help out companies. But perhaps before we dive in too deep, if you would give us a clear definition between issues and crisis, and even a good example of each one of those would really help.
Absolutely. So it's important to know, and I'll give a high-level definition of both, but it's really for every organization to define on their own for themselves. But basically, both issues and crises are negative events or situations that occur. However, the difference is that a crisis threatens to have a long-term negative impact on the organization's reputation and or their bottom line, whereas an issue doesn't. And where the lines get blurred sometimes is that sometimes we think that if a negative issue happens and it begins to go viral, that it automatically means that it's a crisis. But it doesn't necessarily. So issues can go viral negatively, but really that determining factor is this event, is this situation going to have a long-term negative impact on our brand's reputation and or our bottom line? And two good examples that I like to talk about or share, because it's really comparing apples to apples, is the two rogue tweet events that happened a few, well, one happened last year, one happened, I believe, the year before. The first one was the American Red Cross. An employee from within the company, they tweeted out on behalf of the American Red Cross rather than from their personal account. So that's what a rogue tweet is when they accidentally tweet out on behalf of the organization rather than themselves. And the tweet that went out was a tweet that said something, I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of, we found another beer in the fridge, and when we drink, we do it right, # getting scissors, something along those lines. So that tweet went out on behalf of the Red Cross, and
not
nobody
good.
Noticed for about an hour. Nobody noticed internally for about an hour. However, of course, on Twitter, everybody started posing questions of what's going on at the Red Cross. So when they finally realized what happened, they deleted the tweet. And of course, you can never delete a tweet without admitting and stating that you've deleted the tweet. So they deleted the tweet and then put out another tweet that said, don't worry, we've confiscated the keys. So they made light of the situation. They turned it into a humorous situation, and they explained, of course, what happened, that it was just a mistake and that nobody's getting drunk over at the Red Cross. Of course, when you talk to the Red Cross, they say that they deal with emergencies and crises every day, and this is not a crisis. Even though it garnered attention, and at the time, I can say that it did start to be talked about in blogs, is that people were asking questions of what was going on and didn't have any answers because it did take an hour for them to respond, but it was not a crisis. And on the flip side, actually, the Red Cross ended up partnering with the beer company, the brewery that was mentioned in the tweet, which is a small local brewery, and they teamed up to launch this campaign that was, if you donate blood and then go to, like the next day, of course, go to a brewery that sells, or a bar or pub that sells this beer, that you would get a pitcher on the house. And so this was really great. It was really great publicity for both the Red Cross because they got people to donate blood, and as well as for the small brewery who otherwise wouldn't have reached this same reach. So one good point to point out is that an issue, rather than a crisis, an issue is also a time for opportunity, for spotting opportunities from these negative situations and turning them into positive PR possibilities and opportunities. On the flip side, we have KitchenAid, who last week actually during the presidential election, so a few years ago now, wow, they did a rogue tweet as well. So somebody tweeted out on behalf of KitchenAid and said something along the lines of, President Obama, should have known, or his grandma knew better. She died 3 days before he became president, something along the lines of that. And they used the hashtag NBC politics along this. So, of course, right away, this tweet that was very impolite and rude and insulting towards the president of the United States went viral. And when I asked people, when I do the different workshops and presentations, when I ask people why they think that tweet was is a potential crisis rather than an issue, the response that I often get is because of the hashtag NBC politics. However, what people forget to realize, or probably just don't realize because it's not second nature yet for us, is that that tweet was actually defamatory towards the President of the United States. And when we have defamation, we have a potential lawsuit against us, or we have the risk of a lawsuit against us. That, therefore, threatens to have a major impact on a reputation as well as their bottom line. So this rogue tweet, even though it's apples to apples, both are rogue tweets situations, one was very easily and very quickly could have become a crisis, whereas the other one was simply an issue. And it's a long answer, but...
Well, Melissa, I think another point about the KitchenAid one is it was making light of someone's death, and that is always a very bad idea. I want to hear more about this. Maybe we can come up in the next segment with more information. I'm Jane Karwoski with my co-host Deirdre Breckenridge, and you're listening to The Social Network Show. Our guest is Melissa Agnes of Agnes Day.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
Gruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to www.ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where Deirdre Breckenridge and I are chatting with Melissa Agnes of the crisis intelligence firm Agnes Day. Deirdre, do you want to take over from here?
Sure. So, Melissa, thank you for the definition between the issue and the crisis. That was very clear, and it's so important that companies make sure that they don't neglect their issues. At the same time, the way the Red Cross handled it was brilliant and turned it into a positive. And, you know, stepping back, you look at this age of social communications, And the one thing that we're really seeing, especially when it comes to issues that bubble up and turn into crisis, is how involved the public is today. So much more dynamic and vocal than we've ever seen. And companies are definitely seeing more of their customers' involvement in what they're doing. They even say that today your smartphone is no further than 3 feet away from your body at any time. So with all that said, with your smartphone so close and with so many people involved, do you think that this helps in the crisis situation? Does it help the company? Does it hurt the company that everybody's talking? What do you think?
For those, you know what, actually, I'm just going to say that typically, and on the very on a very equal level for a playing field for everybody, obviously today is everything from the news cycle to social media to the noise, the digital noise that evolves around a crisis and that floods communications lines and can become very overwhelming, absolutely presents major, major challenges to crisis management today, which shows the need for organizations more than ever before to be prepared to understand what the challenges are today and to understand how to make those challenges work for them rather than against them in a crisis.
Yeah, that is so important. And, you know, when you're thinking about these challenges and all of the digital noise, you have many parties out there. So it would be great to talk about the media. And I know that you know the news cycles have changed. And what kind of media are we even talking about today when it comes to communicating a crisis? Who are we talking to?
We're talking to everybody, and that's something that is, so media, so this is why I don't like the term social media crisis, because a crisis is a crisis, because a crisis, like we talked earlier, of the definition of a crisis, doesn't matter where the crisis originates. It can be an oil spill, it can be something that originates online or not, it doesn't matter. A crisis will unfold online, just as it will unfold offline as well. So the media is really everything, everybody, and every platform, so traditional media, social media, all of these different mediums. And one thing that I get asked often is that organizations or professionals want to know which platforms they should be on prior to a crisis. And the answer, and in response to your question as well, the answer is where your audiences are. Just because Facebook exists doesn't mean that Facebook is necessarily your most effective means of communication in a crisis. It does if your fans and followers and customers and stakeholders and everybody are going to your Facebook page. But unless they're going to that Facebook page, you have to figure out where they are, how they want to receive your communications, and then make sure that you're on those platforms ready to communicate with them.
Yeah, I wonder if companies are thinking, so if my crisis starts as a YouTube video, if they know that they should make sure they're responding through a video and not on Facebook or Twitter, what advice would you give in that case? Wherever the crisis starts, how do you tell them to respond?
If the crisis starts with a YouTube video, there's so many different layers to this. But for example, let's look at the Domino's Pizza crisis of 2009. This was one of the very first crises to strike an organization very, very powerfully in the age of social media, on social media, and it originated with a YouTube video. YouTube is very, very well ranked. It's very well indexed. Its reach is very vast. So it was very important that Domino's, when they did finally respond, Patrick Doyle, the CEO of Domino's in the U.S., he put out an official response to the crisis via a video on YouTube, and he named, or his team named, that video Domino's response to, I'm paraphrasing here, it's been a while since I looked at this case study, but basically Domino's response to the crisis. So he used the same keywords that the offending video used and put Domino's response. This was important so that whoever is searching for the offending video, because it's garnering all of this hype and they want to go check out what everybody's talking about, it's very important that Domino's response was also found alongside the offending video. And by using technology and these platforms and tools strategically in these ways, you're able to do that, which means that you're able to, ultimately, the goal is to become the narrative of your own crisis, and that's how you start to be able to do that. However, it doesn't mean that Domino's also didn't need to embed that video on their corporate website, that they needed to share it via Twitter to all of their Twitter followers and everybody on Twitter talking about it, that they needed to use the right hashtags, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that is so true. And as the company is communicating through the different channels, making sure using the right hashtag and responding, how is it... It's really important, and I noticed this during the Boston bombings. What about fact-checking? So with so many, let's say, media sources out there sharing information about what's going on, how are we fact-checking? And you know, it just appears that misinformation spreads so quickly as a result of social media. And are you also seeing instances of this as well when the sharing is going on?
Oh, absolutely, especially in really large, you know, globally impacting crises or emergencies. It's so easy to retweet something without reading it, without realizing that you're retweeting something that isn't true, that's, you know, based on falsehoods and false tales. But the thing is that there's this need for immediacy today. So nobody waits for the 6 o'clock news anymore. Not even the 6 o'clock news won't even wait for the 6 o'clock news anymore. So there's this need to be first and to get your message out, and especially in a crisis, to spread that crisis or to hit share because you're connected to it on an emotional and relatable level. So you want to share it, even if it's not through malice towards the organization. What organizations need to realize is that, you know, the news cycle isn't just made up of journalists and reporters who work by the Journalism Code of Ethics. So today's news cycle is made up of citizen journalists, it's made up of bloggers, and just, you know, everyday people like you and I who are also putting in our two cents and sharing what we see along to our followers. So this is important, and with this comes the risk and the reality of lacking fact-checking today and how quickly rumors can escalate. So as an organization, you need to understand this reality. So that means that you also need to figure out in advance how you're going to monitor, filter, triage your monitoring so that you can hopefully get ahead of the story. You can put stops to rumors, correct rumors, and provide information to speculation and so that all of these things don't work against you. But it's also very important that organizations remember that, yes, it's important to communicate in real time in a crisis, but the organization suffering the crisis cannot also be the one or be one of the ones sharing information that has not been fact-checked. So there's two sides of this reality, and both work against the organization, but this is, it just goes back to the points of needing to think this stuff through prior to experiencing a crisis and figuring out ways and empowering your team so that these realities don't work against you.
Right. The one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to dig yourself into a deeper hole while you're in the midst of crisis. So no black marks there. You know, with everything that you've said, we've heard the word planning. And that is one thing that companies should really think about, especially in this age of social conversation. So, you know, with everything around the negative issues and the crisis, what is the best way to get ahead of the story? When does the planning start? And does it ever, you know, do you need to refresh your planning? How do you, as an organization, how do you move forward knowing that crisis could strike at any time?
If you want to, let me do it in a step-by-step so that people can maybe hopefully retain it and maybe even start taking the steps if they haven't already. So if you want to look at where your vulnerabilities are and how you're going to empower and enable your team to get ahead of a story in a crisis and not be drowned out and not let it, you know, spiral out of control, the very first thing that you need to do is you need to do what I call a risk assessment or a vulnerability audit. And this means that you need to get together with different members of different departments. Everybody has a different relationship with both your brand and your stakeholders. So everybody's input is invaluable in these types of exercises. and sit together and think of worst case scenarios, where your vulnerabilities are, where you might, from your daily processes to your marketing and PR campaigns to your communication protocols to the way you interact with customers, all of the above. So just kind of make a huge list. And I like to say that if you can think it today, it can happen. So nothing is unrealistic or nothing is off the table and no suggestion should be minimized. So sit down with your team and brainstorm all kinds of areas or ways that you feel that the organization could be made vulnerable. From when you have that list, you can then take that list and break it down into two sections or categories. The first is preventable risk, and the second is unpreventable risk. Now, the best form of crisis management is crisis prevention. So if you have a list of preventable risks and one of those risks materializes into a crisis, you will get slammed and criticized for not having prevented that risk. So the very first step with that list is to actually go and put plans in motion to prevent the preventable risks. When you're left with the unpreventable risks, then you can categorize them. What is a level 1, 2, 3, for example? You can define what those categories mean to your organization. And then from each of those categories, you can say, who are our audiences? Who are our stakeholder groups, internal and external, that in each one of these situations we absolutely need to communicate with in a crisis or, you know, in real time? And when you have those lists of those stakeholder groups, and it could be everybody from your customers to your vendors to your shareholders, anybody and everybody who has a relationship with your brand that you may need to communicate with needs to be put on this list. And when you have that list, you can then say, okay, where are these people? I have clients that have stakeholder groups that are in such remote areas in the world that unless they communicate with them via fax machine, that old machine that I don't even own anymore, that stakeholder group will not get those messages and cannot, and they cannot be left out of their communications. So it's not just about social media. It's about identifying where your audiences are, period, and how they want to receive information and communications from you in real time when you absolutely need to communicate with them. And then understand the realities and the challenges of crisis, so getting ahead of the news cycle, fact-checking, all of these things that work against us. Understand what real time is and make your life easier by developing holding statements and things like that so that in a crisis you can enable your team to communicate in 15 to 60 seconds because you have a message already created and you just have to add in the specifics of the particular situation. So it's a really long process with so many different levels, and but it's so important. And when you break it down like that, it becomes manageable and it becomes, you can see kind of, you know, from A to Z, what you have to do. And you just go letter by letter, step by step.
Oh, that is such a wonderful synopsis. I just love that. Deirdre, thank you so much for bringing Melissa Agnes on to talk to us today.
Well, Melissa did a wonderful job. You drove home how companies need to plan and how crisis really is a reality today. So thank you, Melissa.
Thank you to you both for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. And thank you, Deirdre, for your participation today.
Well, thank you. And how can we, Melissa, if listeners want to find you, where can they find you?
AgnesDay.com. So that's AgnesDay.com. You could also just Google Melissa Agnes, and you'll find all of this stuff. I do recommend, if you like what you heard today, my Crisis Intelligence podcast is available on my blog at agnesday.com as well as on iTunes and Stitcher. I actually get to talk to all of these amazing people who are doing amazing things in crisis and emergency management for an hour-long conversation and really dissect or dive into their strategies and what's working for them so that you can better and empower your organization to do better. So definitely recommend people checking that out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you, our listeners, for keeping us company today on the Social Network Show, where you hear commentary and analysis of our connected networked world. And we've valued the advice today from Melissa Agnes of Agnes Day and Deirdre Breckenridge of Pure Performance Communications. You are listening to us coming from the beautiful studios of Greenspun Journalism and Media Studies at University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Please follow us on Twitter at SocialNetShow and LinkedIn, Jim Nico. You can follow him as he publishes his thoughts there. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us via questions at thesocialnetworkstation.com. Please have fun and be safe, online and off, until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspun School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.